Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hi, and thanks for joining us today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. Stay the course. This is the advice my guest today gives other men discerning a call to the priesthood. That's because staying the course has been the theme of his life and his vocation. He's Father Martin Ralco. He is the pastor of St. Nicholas Parish in Zanesville, and he's here to talk about his journey of faith. So first of all, welcome to AM 820, Father Ralco.
Well, thank you.
We're glad to have you with us. And I know, Father, that your story begins in Dearborn, Michigan, where you grew up in what sounds to me like a Catholic ghetto. And I don't mean a ghetto in terms of that it was run down or anything, but in terms of it being thoroughly infiltrated by a Catholic culture. So talk a little bit about your family and maybe how they initially shaped you in the faith.
Well, I'm the oldest son of a family of seven kids. And we grew up in basically a Catholic neighborhood. The church was about a block away, and it was really kind of like the center of our lives, our education, our worship. You know, we always went to the playground. We did a lot of stuff in terms of just being around the parish and being active in the parish. And I know myself as a child, I became an altar server, and that was an important part of my life, is to be an altar server at St. Sabina.
So you grew up with a very strong Catholic family, mm-hmm. family that prayed together, maybe, and had devotions. And coinciding with that strong Catholic family was a strong Catholic education from grade school, really on up. You've been thoroughly educated in the Catholic school system. And you tell me that your earliest recollection of a calling stems back to grade school. Can you pinpoint when that might have been or why that was?
Well, you know, I know that my pastor at the time was Father Joseph Howard, and I remember being back in first grade, you know, just always looking up to this giant of a man. He visited with people after church. He was always talking, laughing. And then after a couple of years, made my first communion. I thought that was like a special day. I still remember it quite vividly. But it was right in the third grade that I seriously thought about wanting to become a priest.
And was it largely then, you think, because of Father Howard, about his example, how he was interacting with, you know, the kids and the adults? And
oh, sure. Yeah, he was, he used to enjoy watching him, you know, even from the classroom. He had windows. You could see out across the field and where the parish rectory was. And occasionally he'd be out there with the nine iron and practicing a short shot. He'd cut across through the school playground, and every once in a while a football would end up in his hands, and he'd send people out for passes. And, you know, he walked around and was just, you know, very much present to us as kids. And he just seemed like your average, everyday, run-of-the-mill, wonderful guy.
Sounds like a little bit like Father O'Malley,
yeah,
Bing Crosby.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and an interesting thing I find about your vocation story is that initially, you know, when you were young, there wasn't a lot of outside encouragement, not that there was discouragement, but like there wasn't someone out there taking you under their wing to nurture this budding vocation, but still you stayed the course, and this thought of priesthood didn't go away.
Right. It was there, and I don't ever recall, you know, a vocation director from the Archdiocese of Detroit coming to the schools or anything, mm-hmm. but I do remember having an encounter with the Pine Missionaries. So their headquarters was in the Detroit area. And I started to get their newsletter, their vocation club newsletter, and actually I went on retreats. When I was in the fifth grade, was my first weekend retreat with the Pimes, and went on an annual retreat every year with them. And part of it was that we looked at that they were like really interested that I had a vocation, and they took that seriously. And we would go on retreats, and when we were in grade school on the weekends, and they were bona fide retreats. It wasn't all fun and games. It was, you know, mm-hmm. prayer time. There was a conference time. They always showed us a missionary movie, and mm-hmm. we discussed that. To live at the seminary for a weekend, and we pray with the students. We go to Mass with the students. We had benediction with the students. it was really just a bona fide, serious, spiritual retreat.
And so do you think that when you announced that your choice of high school was going to be the St. Peter and Paul High School Seminary in Newark, which was run by the Pimes, that maybe people began to take you seriously, that maybe you really do have a vocation? This is serious.
Right. When I told the principal, Sister Marie, Sister Martin Ann, when she was the when I was in eighth grade, you know, I had a little form saying, you know, that I wanted to go into the seminary, and she was kind of like, oh, really? And I, yeah. I said, well, good luck.
Were your classmates surprised?
Not really, because, you know, after Father Howard had was transferred, Father Frank Lukasiewicz was there, and I always called him Father Luke, and he was one that, when I was about the sixth grade, always kind of calling on me to, you know, take care of this, do this, you know, because I was one of the regular servers, and he gave me more and more responsibilities at the parish. And when funerals came along, he says, get Marty Relico. And I would set up things for him. He'd go on vacation, and he'd know the sacraments. He would all be set, the vestments would be ready, and the right things in the right place. And then it's amazing that I had a lot of responsibilities just in grade school alone. In fact, even when I was in the eighth grade, he used to call me. He says, I'm going to be gone for the evening. Could you come down to the rectory and answer the phone for me from, you know, 4 o'clock until 7 or whatever? And so I'd go down there. He said, here's the TV. Of course, I did my homework and would answer phones and take messages for him.
So you would go to St. Peter's and Paul in Newark, you know, this high school seminary. Were you able to acclimate there pretty easily in terms of the schedule, the academics, being away from home and all that?
Sure.
Probably being away from home wasn't that unusual for you because you had, like you said, done so many retreats. So.
Yeah, retreats and summer camp. And so being away from home wasn't an anxiety thing for me. I didn't experience any kind of homesickness. Besides, with 7 of us kids in a 3-bedroom ranch-style home.
You're probably like anxious.
Know, I never had so much room in all my life.
Now, there was a brief moment in your staying the course in high school that you thought of an alternative to priesthood briefly. What was that?
Yeah, well, you know, studying and working in high school, I found, you know, just the academics just a little bit challenging for me. I was just your average student. And when we were going on to the college seminary, we took most of our classes at the University of Detroit. Well, I didn't think I'd be able to hack the University of Detroit. I don't know. I just didn't have the confidence. And so I looked into, one weekend, I stopped by the in town. We were able to go into town on Saturday afternoons and you took a 5-mile walk into Heath, Ohio, and came to a military recruiting office. And next thing I looked at the Air Force, and the guy was interested. And, invited me to come and take an Air Force test. And I asked the rector at the seminary if it was possible. And he said, yeah, that's okay. You can do that if you'd like. And so this recruiter came by the seminary, picked me up, took me into town. I took the test on one school day in the morning, and then I came back. Well, the test came back, and, you know, I passed with flying colors, as it were. And that was kind of a confidence booster for myself. But then a word got out, and, you know, some of the college seminarians came down one weekend and said, hey, Relico, what's this deal? You're Air Force. Are you kidding me? Come on. And we ended up getting into a lot of discussion. And there was a couple of the priests that were also from the college kind of pulled me aside and, you know, kind of, you know, boosted me a little bit. And I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. You know, so I kind of put the Air Force off to the side. I figured since I'm already used to being away from home into a regimented life, I would have a step ahead of most recruits because I was used to a disciplined life. And
But you decided you would give the priesthood a try first, seminary a try.
Yeah, sure. And I, the idea, stay the course.
So you stay the course. You'd go to a college seminary in Detroit. At that time, it was a consortium of former seminaries, including the one in Memphis, Michigan, where you had gone on retreat. You're familiar with that one.
Right.
And in that experience, you'd take courses at both the University of Detroit and the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
Grew in love for philosophy during those years. And you also had a number of real-world jobs. How did the jobs, that work experience, help shape you, do you think?
Well, during the summer, it was just fortunate, being in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people in the right places. I worked at one summer at General Motors, mm-hmm. at Detroit Diesel, the assembly line. Actually, more in terms of just building diesel engines. I spent a couple summers working at Chrysler Corporation, building Dodge trucks. And then a couple summers, while I was still in the seminary, then after I had left the Pimes, I was working at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Southfield, Michigan, which is the art run by the Archdiocese of Detroit. And they would hire seminarians first. And through the experience of the summers around my college days, that I made enough money in the summer to pay off my college tuition without having to accrue any kind of college debt, which was kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah. Nowadays, the factory jobs just aren't available.
Yeah. The other thing about that seminary job is it was a contemplative
mm-hmm. yeah, the
situation.
Cemetery, yeah.
Because you were cutting grass.
Yeah. I got chosen to be on one of the driving mowers, and this place is huge. And I would just basically drive a lawnmower cutting grass, and I thought, gee, I'm sitting in the sun, I'm cutting grass, I'm thinking, and I'm getting paid to do this.
Yeah, and that thinking, that contemplative, you'll have that experience again. I do want to talk mm-hmm. about that as well, but that's something I think all of us need, that thinking time. But we're talking with Father Martin Rolko. He's pastor of St. Nicholas Parish in Zanesville, and he's our guest today on Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. So, Father, without any major ups or downs, you graduated college seminary in 1977. You were ready to move on to theology, and that would take you from Detroit to Chicago to the Catholic Theological Union there. And then after a year of theology, you were given an interesting assignment back at the high school seminary, the Pime mm-hmm. Seminary, where you studied. So talk about that.
It was a chance that after the first year of theology to take the position of assistant dean of students at St. Peter and Paul Seminary in Newark, which I thought was, yeah, this is a great idea. I get a chance to teach for a year, and then besides teaching, but also just to be around the seminary, help with the supervision, just being a student, organizing things. We all did our own maintenance at the seminary when I was there as a student, and even then at that time, so to make sure that, students are, stripping, waxing, mopping, mm-hmm. cleaning up, all those different activities that we took care of ourselves. And so I was kind of watching over a lot of that, helping out, teaching students how to mop,
right.
how to clean bathrooms.
And you'd also, I guess, discover that you had a gift for teaching, because teaching, as we'll talk about, is going to be a big part of your calling.
Right.
And
right.
And so that's interesting to be on the other side of the desk, right,
as
a teacher.
It was.
And then you returned to Chicago, and you experienced what you call a location crisis.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about the Pine missionaries was that foreign missions. And all of a sudden, I started to get a little bit of cold feet about foreign missions. And I had known a number of priests who had gone to the foreign missions. And I always thought there was something about the idea of being a foreigner twice. And that is that you go to a foreign country.
Right.
Okay, you have to learn the language, the customs, and be able to work with the people. But also the Pimes were predominantly an Italian order.
Mm-hmm.
And to live in a community that was predominantly Italians, mm-hmm. that's like another culture
that's
and
right.
another language.
That's right.
And I always thought, oh, this is being a foreigner twice. And I'm not sure if I can juggle that. And all of a sudden it's like the foreign mission thing, I thought I would grow in a great love for it. With all the years in the Pimes were absolutely wonderful to me in terms of nurturing my vocation and really helped me along the way. But I just didn't have that zeal for mission territory.
So now, for the first time, you're altering your course.
Yes.
You realize that's not the specific direction.
Yeah.
You return home, and your plan was to approach the Archdiocese of Detroit.
Correct.
About the diocesan, priesthood there. That door wasn't opening for you yet.
No, it wasn't. Part of that was, at that particular time, psychology was a big thing. And so, we need to go to a psychologist and, you need to get some counseling. Because they thought, well, you're a lifer. You went to the high school seminary. You lived a sheltered life.
Right.
And you got to find out what it's like to live in the real world. And I'm thinking,
I
don't know.
You'd already worked in the real
I've already
world
worked in the real world
all those summers and,
and
paid all your debt.
Yeah, I had no debt,
And taught.
So, yeah, so I thought, okay. Well, that summer, fortunately, my bright idea was, I'm going to Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. So I went back to the cemetery, and they hired me right away, and I began working at the beginning of May. And again, cutting grass.
And thinking.
And yeah, and thinking the whole time through. In about the middle of the summer, one of my priest friends said he wanted to go to Kentucky to the Trappist Monastery for a week retreat. And said, hey, do you want to go with me? I said, I think I can get a week off to do that. So on the way down from Detroit, we stopped off in Columbus, another one of our priest friends at his parish. And then we continued on down to Kentucky to Gethsemane, and I spent the week thinking about this. And on the way back, we stopped again at the parish and spent Friday night there, and we were leaving for Detroit on Saturday. And Saturday morning, I was sitting talking to this priest in the living room there and drinking a cup of coffee. And I said, you know, I really like it here in Columbus. And he goes, well, here's the vocation director's name and number.
And that priest, by the way, is Father Kevin Lutz, who we all know and love.
Correct, yes. Yes.
And so, you know, because it's so interesting because we've had guests on the program and they've talked about times when outside people or outside situations seem to present an obstacle to vocation. Mm-hmm. So like the Archdiocese of Detroit for you was not opening that door, you know, but it seems that when it really is God's plan that mm-hmm. the door will open. And so with that discernment time and the retreat and then, you know, running into Father Lutz is a Pine Father.
Right. Yes.
So you have that tie there.
I knew him when I was in high school.
So so that would be the next step, is that you would then come to Columbus.
Correct.
And pursue priesthood here.
Correct. And it was through trying to move down to Columbus and to get myself established here. Well, you know, at where Kevin Lutz was and Father Ken Grimes was the pastor. And he had mentioned this to an individual at a New Year's Eve party or New Year's Day football party. And that was Mr. Hugh Dorian. And Mr. Dorian says, well, hey, have him send me his resume. Well, and then I sent my resume right away to Hugh Dorian. And he said, come on down. I'll hire you and work at City Income Tax. And it says to transition me to Columbus. So I worked at City Income Tax mm-hmm. In the auditor's office, you know, basically doing a lot of file work and finding lost files and just kind of organizing things. And I worked there for about 9 months. So the next school year came along, and
right.
So I had a chance to establish myself in Columbus. I had a job, and things were working out really well. And so in the following September, I went down to Mount St. Mary's in Cincinnati.
Right, and that's where you would study, get your theology degree, mm-hmm. and then you were ordained 31 years ago now. So
yeah.
You priest 31 years. Been at a lot of places. Started at St. Nicholas, where you are today as
correct.
An assistant priest. You've taught at Bishop Rosecrans. You've been at St. Mary Magdalene. You taught at St. Bishop Reedy. You've been at St. Francis in Newark, St. Brendan's in Hilliard. Did some chaplaincy at OSU.
Actually, that was at Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
They asked me if I wanted to go to OSU. I said,
oh, that's right. Children's Hospital. That's
yeah,
right.
So that's...
And
yes.
I want to touch on this one pastoral though position, your first pastoral position, because I know our half hour is winding down here. Immaculate Conception in Denison, not only way out on the fringes of the diocese, but it was a mess when you arrived, which mm-hmm. I know because you were used to cleaning up, you know, mm-hmm. and having, you know, neat and orderly and a situation. But you have a marvelous story about that I do want to touch on. You went there devastated. This was a very difficult situation yeah. for you, but there was a turning point in
yeah.
that. Share that.
I do get choked up when I think about it. But, I moved into the parish, and it was a hot day, 97 degrees. The humidity was 95%. The air conditioning wasn't working, and it was just a miserable situation. And I spent a lot of time trying to unpack, trying to clean. And the day I got there, I cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and, you know, just trying to get something set up so that I could have coffee in the morning. And I found it about 1 o'clock at night when I was cleaning in the kitchen. I thought, oh, my gosh, there's no coffee. What am I going to do in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
I got to get up and say Mass and smile. So but then after Mass, I grabbed the secretary and said, I need to go out for breakfast, you know. She's, well, I already ate. She says, no, you got to sit here and talk to me and tell me what's going on. And so I went out for breakfast and I came back and I spent the day cleaning. And after spending the whole day just not making any progress, but just cleaning, because the place really was, God bless, it was a mess. And as I was, as the secretary left, I was just kind of pacing around like a madman. I was just so upset. I just could not unpack. I just wanted to go and wanted to leave. And as I was walking through my office, I looked out the front window on First Street, and two girls went riding by the church on their bicycles. And as they passed the church, they made the sign of the cross. Mm. I said, oh, my God. I hadn't seen that since I was in grade school. And I thought, shut up, Ralph, go. These are good people. Take care of them.
Yeah.
So I did.
Jesus was there.
Yeah.
It was a holy place.
Yeah.
And that was the turning point for you to say,
yeah,
I can do this.
Yeah.
I will do this.
Yeah, pretty much so. It was just this little simple sign. And, of course, those two girls, I didn't tell them that I saw that until they graduated from high school. And I wrote them a letter thanking them.
I know. And that's so important. How many times we may make some simple gesture without even thinking about it and how profound that can be on someone. That was profound. I'm using that actually in a talk I'm giving, that little story. So it's wonderful. And you'd be there for 14 years at Immaculate Conception, and you cleaned that place up, you rebuilt, you quite a different place when you left 14 years later.
I was able to do a lot of renovations, construction, rebuilding, addition. I spent over $1 million, but didn't incur any kind of debt doing it.
Amazing.
And
amazing. What a
grants
gift.
And people, donating, and it worked out really well.
Oh, that was such a good, happy ending story. And then you went to St. Nicholas, where it all began for you.
Right.
Now as pastor there for, how many years is it now?
Yeah, it'll be 6 years this summer.
6 years. And was that any kind of difficulty coming to be a pastor at a place you started? Because I know that's a generational parish. A lot of people for a lot of years go there. So was that okay? Easy transition?
Well, it was exciting at first, but then there's also some folks were just a little bit disappointed in me because I wasn't the same guy I was 31 years ago. Who is? but that when I was first there, I was teaching. I was energetic. I spent a lot of time going to high school football games, basketball games, baseball games. I was really involved.
You had less responsibility,
as
an assistant priest, right?
As I always say, since I was young, you're responsible and immature. And everybody likes that. But now when you get, you become the pastor, you got more responsibilities.
Yeah.
When I was first there was four priests there. Now I'm there by myself. And so there's more responsibilities, more duties. More decisions you have to make. You have to take a stand on a lot of things, and all of a sudden, you're not fun anymore.
You're too serious. I have a question for you. All of us, no matter what our vocation is, have times of disillusionment, days when we wonder, why are we doing this in the first place? Is it worth all of this? How do you get through those kinds of days?
Hmm. Well, I like to start my day off with Mass. Of course, even before Mass, I'm up and I do my morning prayers. And, and I had gone to bed the night before thinking about the readings of the day. And I kind of put the finishing touches on a morning homily. And then after Mass, it's just a quiet time just to ponder and to think. Different times in the day, it's just the prayerful times. Times I just like to just go back to my room and just shut everything out and just stay the course, as it were. Try to recharge in those ways. I have a group of priests that I do get together with on a regular basis, and I think that's always important. It's kind of you can call it a support group. That sounds too psychological, but we're good friends, and we get together and we talk and kind of encourage each other. Don't get down about a lot of things, one of the guys is retired, says, you worry about too many things. Y'all let go of that. You worry too much.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, that's my thing, because I'm a type A personality. I worry.
Yeah.
I plot and plan. I want things done perfectly.
Yeah.
Which is like a handicap, too, because you want things done perfectly, and you're type A. Sometimes you don't start things because you're not going to be able to do it perfectly.
Listen, in our last minute that we have together, I'm sure you have, between your priesthood and all your teaching, you've encountered men that have been considering the priesthood and trying to find their own course. What advice do you give them?
Stay the course. If it's a calling and it's true, it'll be there. It's not going to go away. Listen to it. You know, think of all the blessings you've had in life and what has brought you to this moment, you know, and it says something. I know throughout my own life, a lot of things have happened. And I look at, you know, the places I've been, the people I've worked with, and for them, it's like really important for me to be a priest. You know, my friends that, you know, that I taught with, you know, it's like we're all pretty much the same age. And it's always important for them to say, I have a good friend that's a priest. Mm-hmm. And I always find the encouragement in that.
Well, it sounds like you are a real blessing to St. Nicholas out in Zanesville, Father Rolko. And we so enjoy having you on the show today and hearing your beautiful story. Can you leave us with your blessing, please?
Good. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
And may Almighty God bless you, and the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you again, Father Rolko. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. You can catch our show on Tuesdays and Sundays at 12:30 when we talk with priests and deacons and religious about their spiritual journeys, how they've heard God calling in their lives and how they've responded to that call. So tune in again for another guest and another story. In the meantime, have a wonderful week. God bless.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Many support a woman's right to choose, but sadly, few know the consequences. The Catholic Medical Association supports your right to know. Medical abortions, which are performed up to 9 weeks of pregnancy with pills, are promoted as being safe and something the woman can do herself at home. However, a recent large study showed that women having a medical abortion have a 20% chance of significant complications, such as excessive bleeding, infection, and the need for surgery. To find out more, visit cathmed.org.